Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Show on cable radio in Portland, Oregon, talking to Jeremy Bricker today about the LIFT program for saving humanity from still accelerating global slow roasting. Bricker co-founded the Labor Network for Sustainability, written some 13 books, including the classic book Strike, that's about the worker uprisings that have punctuated U.S. history and transformed the country. His latest book, Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action, is about how social movements arise and how they change the world. Today's interview is the third installment of a long interview that explored the threat of global warming. Also, the emergence of left and corporate programs for stopping global warming and the superiority of the left program. I first asked him today to discuss the left program. He modestly responded, that's appropriate, of course. But his program that he discussed is an excellent outline of the emerging left program.
Well, I'm not sure that I can speak for the left or what the left program is, but I can certainly talk about what I think is important and what should be incorporated in anybody's program for resisting climate change in a way that leads to more democracy and more equality and a better life for ordinary folks. So I would say the first criterion that needs to be applied is it has to be effective. We are facing a climate emergency. It sounds like a cliche, but it is actually an understatement. And so the need to halt the ongoing flooding of the atmosphere with fossil fuels pollution is absolutely got to be central for any program, left, right, center, or bottom or top. If it doesn't actually radically reduce fossil fuels burning on a time scale that fits with what scientists say is necessary, then it's not it's not the program. It's not the left, right, or center program. It's a fake program. So it's very easy to see that a number of things that are being proposed and carbon captures, sucking, going ahead burning fossil fuels, but sucking all of the carbon out on its way, or even more implausible, sucking carbon and other greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. Anybody who looks at it with any kind of open mind can see that these are totally non-credible for the point of view of actually reducing greenhouse gas pollution at a level that climate scientists have said is necessary. So that's one crucial part of it. So then what is necessary is, first of all, enormous decrease in the amount of energy we need to use, and that fossil fuel energy, that can be done in numerous ways, but the amount of our pollution that is our fossil fuel use and the consequent pollution that's the result of transportation is enormous. The amount that is the result of buildings, heat loss and mechanical systems in buildings of all kinds is enormous. And the electricity use is enormous. And those are the three largest sources of fossil fuel pollution. We have to reduce the amount of energy that we need to use and then use non-fossil fuel energy. And we need to use non-fossil fuel energy that doesn't present colossal other problems. After what we just went through with close to catastrophe of the nuclear power plant in Ukraine is just an example of the insane risks that are involved with using nuclear energy as the solution. The fact that there still is no plan for how to permanently store radioactive waste from nuclear power plants is another aspect of this. And the fact that nuclear power plants, building nuclear power plants, is absolutely insanely expensive compared with solar, wind, and geothermal sources of energy. So that's an example of we have to apply just rational scientific criteria to say that the new energy system that we're building is actually something that's going to effectively reduce greenhouse gases. So that's point one. Point two is we need to not put people in the situation where they say, well, I want to save the future and make the energy transition that we have to make, but I also have to put food on the table and shoes on my kids. And if what this means is we're going to have economic catastrophe, both the immediate loss of jobs in the fossil fuel industry, but also the inability to have an economy that creates jobs and produces the things people need, then I'm not going to cut my own throat to do that. And that's why I think, although we certainly need to make substantial changes in the economy and create both different ways of making things and changes in the things that we make, I'm very wary of a generalized idea that what we need to do is shrink the economy or make less or not have growth. It depends what you mean by growth. If growth means making just more things, more material, or making more profits for corporations and wealthy individuals, then absolutely we have to make less. But there are things that we have to make more of. At the moment, we have to make more COVID tests. I just went out and tried to buy a COVID test, and it was $15 for one test. And meanwhile, people around me are getting COVID, and I have to be sure not to spread it. That's a tiny little example. But certainly we need to be making more housing. Certainly we need to be building hospitals in rural areas and in city centers where people are being, where hospitals are being closed and people are being left with no medical care. So I think the simple idea that, well, we're just making too much stuff and we have to stop is not very well considered and, in fact, can easily backfire and be used by capital in general and the fossil fuel industry in particular to say, look at these people, what are they trying to do for you? And by the way, if you read the right-wing websites and the fossil fuel industry websites, this is exactly the argument they make. The people who are trying to cut down on fossil fuels are trying to make you be poor, to make you live without gasoline, without being able to get from one place to another. That's exactly the argument they're using. And so if we're going to talk about alternatives, I think we have to talk not about just smaller or less, but we have to talk concretely about what we plan to do in order to make it possible for people to have a decent life, a better life than they have now, for a big part of our population, more things. After all, 40% of our population is living on less than $15 an hour and need more and deserve more. So I think it's a mistake to formulate it in a gross way as should we be making more or should we be making less, but rather let's make less of the things that we don't need and that hurt us, starting with the things that are destroying the climate, but also including weapons of war and including private airplanes that are further destroying the climate. And we could all make a list of those things that we should be making less of. But I think we need to emphasize also there are other things that we need to be making more of.
Yeah, I agree. I discussed the insane consumption of a small group. You're absolutely right. In fact, it's on an international basis. There are lots of people who are starving and more because of climate change, starving and living in destitution, probably 1.5 billion in complete destitution. Yeah, we also have to consider them and consider the subsidizing countries like Brazil to stop ranching in the and lumbering the Amazon rainforest. And there are rainforests all over the world. The capital is exploring now, like in the Congo, another enormous rainforest. The Congolese are threatening to sell off parts of it to lumbering firms, mining firms, oil extraction. It's a really rich country, and the people are dead poor, many, many. You can't talk about degrowth in that way any more than you want to talk about the abolition of police. Those discussions are enormously damaging to any possibility of actually changing the way, quote, public safety is done, or in fact, in developing a climate action plan. And they give their corporate set wonderful talking points. And there are other ways of dealing with public safety and with climate change that are very difficult for the corporate set and the fossil fuel industries to deal with. It seems to me that one of those ways, Jeremy Bricker, is to demonstrate how there are many, many cities across the world that are either approaching and many who have in fact succeeded in becoming zero carbon. Now, you have to take all of the claims with a bit of salt, but it seems to me that we can demonstrate that we have the technologies now, and time is really important to end the burning of fossil fuels, to change agricultural practices, to become more productive. That would, of course, hurt the agribusiness interests. They'd have to learn something new, and they like the system as it is. It seems to me that we can demonstrate that. And in our cities, we can show people right now the rooftop solar is much cheaper than any other source of, well, wind can be cheaper, actually. But wind turbines are a bit of a problem. They will be necessary for all population concentration, some of them. Most of the big cities, though, are on the coasts or big lakes or river confluences. It seems to me that we have to be able to show people that our system works. It will work quickly. It's more reliable because it doesn't need this huge grid. We can produce electricity efficiently near the point of use in almost every area of the world. Why don't you comment on that, that we have to demonstrate there are alternative works. But before we discuss that we have to demonstrate that the LEP program actually works, we have to identify ourselves here. So this is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, our old mole variety hour. And we call the varieties and the variety of struggles from below that we cover. Bill Resnick here interviewing Jeremy Brecker of the Labor Network for Sustainability. His recent report on the network's website, Making a Green New Deal from Below, it details union efforts to deal with climate change. His recent article, Stormy Weather, Climate Change and a Divided Labor Movement, discusses the many unions going in the other direction in hopes of saving some jobs by joining the corporations to oppose climate action efforts. We asked him today to detail the LEP program and its superiority to the corporate plan. Next, we'll continue the interview discussing the importance of demonstrating to the people of the U.S. and the world that the LEP program works.
I'm very glad you brought it up. This is what I am mostly working on and writing about at the moment, because when you look closely, you discover that in cities and communities and states all over the country, and similar things are happening in other countries too, there is developing what I call the Green New Deal from below. The principles of the Green New Deal, that is climate protection that creates jobs and counters injustice, moves to greater equality. That Green New Deal is happening from below all over the country. And you mentioned some of the state plans, and that's part of what I am writing about right now. And you mentioned various kinds of solar. It includes rooftops on individual homes and other buildings, but it also includes things like community solar or solar gardens and solar farms, as they're known, that can provide solar energy for people whose rooftop faces the wrong way, like mine, or for other reasons are not in a position to put solar on their own rooftop. But there are ways that that can be done in a shared fashion. And the city's dimension of this that you laid out is crucially important. And there are many cities that have their own Green New Deal type programs. They may call it that or not, but they are doing not only energy production things like solar energy production, but also things like electrifying transportation, moving from individual private vehicles to public transit of various kinds. The cities are making free transit for young people, for example, and your neighbor, the state of Washington, has, I understand, just passed legislation which will have bicycle education in the schools for every student, and every student who participates in bicycle education will get a free bicycle. And the idea behind it, by the way, is not just to help kids get around or get them off our backs. The purpose of it is to build a non-car-based culture in which people will say, well, I don't really want to go by car. I'd really like to go by bicycle, or I'd like to go by public transit, and now I see that I can. So that, to my mind, is an example of the kind of creativity we need, because reducing and eventually eliminating fossil fuel production that destroys the climate is going to take a lot of creativity and the participation of a lot of people. And I mean a lot of people, like being a community effort like we've only seen in wartime when everyone was knitting sweaters for the troops and engaging in activities that were necessary for the war effort. We need to have that kind of participation in activities that are necessary for the climate war.
Yeah. Jeremy, one other thing that should be discussed here, your green, the people of the cities or counties and in rural areas that are served mostly by public cooperatives, by cooperative entities of one kind or another, those people also are the rural conservative farmers are, in fact, pushing the co-ops also that buy from big coal plants and then funnel it to all the cooperatives who have the supply lines. They're demanding to move towards renewable energy and, in fact, begin creating renewable energy all over in those localities because it's so much cheaper. Those farmers could save them half of their power costs if they went to renewable energy, and they don't have to be paying the coal barons and the coal-producing, coal generation plant owners a good deal of the resources that should go into developing your lots of things that are needed. Now, how did I get into that? Do you remember, Jeremy, what I was going towards?
Rural areas, and that they are also part of this story, and that is definitely one of the things I'm working on for the Green New Deal from Below that I'm writing about. Involves many, many kinds of experiments and developments that have to do with agriculture, forestry, and of course, agriculture and forestry not only can be made less intensive in terms of using fossil fuels for fertilizer and for equipment, but they actually can effectively take carbon out of the atmosphere, unlike mechanical means that claim to do that but are extremely dubious in terms of being effective. But farming practices can make a very large contribution to taking greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. It involves especially rebuilding the soil, because soil is a great absorber of carbon, but a lot of our soil has been degraded, so it means rebuilding the soil, and it means also more obviously planting crops that are carbon negative, that pull carbon out of the atmosphere. And of course, all plants use carbon as building blocks for their existence, for their material being. So this is a very natural, but it turns out scientifically very effective way of withdrawing carbon from the atmosphere. And at the same time, we have numerous problems that have to do with food, the degradation of our food system through over-reliance on chemicals and fertilizer. So if we move in this kind of direction, along the side benefits of moving toward an agricultural system that can withdraw carbon from the atmosphere, and as well as putting less in, can also be part of making our food system healthier and making food available that's more locally grown and not so dependent on trucks and airplanes carrying it from one end of the country or from one continent to another. So that's in itself a greenhouse gas emissions reducer.
Yeah, all of the many beneficial changes in all of our systems, they're possible, they're proven, like regenerative agriculture that you just described. But as you pointed out, it's going to take people to participate in these struggles. And it has in it that added attraction, it seems to me, for the left, is that in that participation, people become more and more committed to sort of democratic engagement and capable of doing it. And that's, it seems to me, is a crucial goal for all global societies that are now facing these media onslaughts that are devoted to transforming people from decision makers and thoughtful to consumers, where life's satisfaction are found not in work, not in creativity, but in getting new goods, which of course is ultimately becomes a deeply demoralizing life direction. It seems to me that this democratic engagement within those cities is important for any program that wants to maintain the ecosystems upon which our lives depend. And it's so good for almost everybody, but the people who want to accumulate riches as their life passion. Jeremy, you got the last word.
Well, I'd like to say that I think you're pointing out the centrality of democracy to creating all the other changes we need is crucial. And I think we have to combine that with what more and more people are recognizing, which is even the flawed democracy that we have is under very serious threat. We saw that in the attempt to overcome the last presidential election, to overthrow the results. We see it in the insurrection that took place January 6th in the Capitol, but more decentralized, we see it in the exclusion of all kinds of people from access to voting and the increased gerrymandering and other distortions of democratic structure. And I think that part of the struggle for all the things that we need, climate protection, but also for health care, for housing, for civil rights, these are all entwined with the struggle to preserve and extend our democracy. And I agree with you completely that what happens at the local level in the city, in the county, in the state is a crucial building block for rebuilding our democracy.
That was Jeremy Brecker discussing the Left's program for saving humanity from global roasting and continuing the human experiment. He began modestly saying, "I'm not sure I can speak for the Left." Then he offered his ideas, which for me is an excellent outline of the Emerging Left program. So, Jeremy Brecker, writer, activist, keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to the book you're writing now. And for our audience, tell us how to get, well, Strike is available in any decent bookstore. Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action. It's a wonderful book, and it deals in detail with some of the things we are talking about today, many of them.
Many of my books are available for free download on my website, which is simply www.jeremybrecker.org. And the ones that aren't there for download, you can find out where to get them. So it's www.jeremybrecker.org.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
Thanks, Bill. Good to be with you.